Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Every team, every topic, everywhere, this is Believe.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to another episode of The Only Podcast. I am your co-host, Austin Smith, joined as always by your other co-host, John Kirby. You can find us on Twitter at ACSmith06 and at John_Kirby. And as always, follow the mothership at Believe Network. Today is Monday, February 12th, and guess what? BetOnline continues to be your number one source for all your basketball wagering needs, including pro and college hoops throughout the year. That's right. The Super Bowl was yesterday. We're ditching it. We're done. Football, old news. With up-to-the-minute odds, stats, and trends, you can follow your favorite team's path to the playoffs unless you're a Pistons fan with in-game live betting contests and all the best player props. Experience the world's best wagering platform anytime from your desktop or your mobile device. Head to BetOnline today to become part of the team. And remember to use your promo code BELIEVE, that's B-L-E-A-V, for your 50% welcome bonus on your first deposit. John, BetOnline is ready to move past the Super Bowl, but I think we should spend a little time here talking about it.
Okay.
Kyle Shanahan.
Boy.
Oh, man. I don't even really know what to say.
Like, it's over. Like, he's so far in his head now.
What's the comparison, like, to a guy? It's honestly...
Rick Barnes.
Yeah, Rick Barnes is a good one.
Who else?
College football, honestly, until this year was probably Harbaugh, where you're like, he's very good, but he's just not good enough. You know, mate, my piece of advice, Connor Stallions.
Cheat.
I'm just saying. Listen, if you want it, the man is who cheated better than anybody else ever is now employed in your league and in your state. So if you want to catch up and at least be like the best team in California, it sounds like you got a little bit of work to do there, Kyle. But dude, just, it is funny. I saw some like meme that was like the Kyle Shanahan matrix, and it was like, is incredible, schemes up incredibly for his deeply flawed QB comes up short inevitably in the big game. It's like that was the Kyle Shanahan cycle, and man, did that come to roost in overtime last night. Just
Ryan Day. He's a little Ryan Day right now.
Ooh, I like that. That's pretty good.
I mean, he's just got a squad. He knows how to use it, and then just like forgets. Although, in this case, we have to give a little bit of credit to the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
Like, I think it's like a little understated how Patrick Mahomes' best wide receivers were Hardman and
Rice.
His
best wide receiver was playing college football at SMU last year.
Jeez, man. And then Valdez
Scantling, of course.
He managed in the final drive to win the game. He managed to turn a 4-yard gain into an 8-yard loss.
And it was impressive.
And they didn't lose. Like, Patrick Mahomes, those are the guys he's dealing with. It's like if Cassius Winston was playing on this Michigan State team, he'd be like doing it despite everyone else, basically.
Oh, my God. I do want to not to take anything away from Patrick Mahomes, because like clearly he made huge plays when you needed to. Of course, right? It's like he has officially entered, not that he wasn't there before, but he's officially entered the Brady tier of like,
yeah,
yeah, Niners are the better team, but Patrick Mahomes, like, not again, not that he wasn't there, but if you ever, that last little iota of doubt is now just completely gone. But I think the man who deserves so much credit that he probably gets it, but maybe doesn't among like the all time greats is Steve Spagnuolo. Mm-hmm. Like the Chiefs may not have made the playoffs this year, let alone won the frickin' Super Bowl, if he didn't put together that kind of defense. Like their defense, there's defense that won them that game. Yeah. It's what kept them in that game.
It's true.
Against like a great offense. I mean, it took the Niners throwing a halfback or like a trick play from Juwan Jennings throwing across the field, which should have been intercepted.
By the way,
yeah,
I don't think anyone even knew. I don't think Juwan Jennings knew he was on the 49ers until the Super Bowl, and he had the game of his life.
Yeah, played incredible. But just Spagnuolo, I think, has 4 rings now because he was a defensive coordinator for another team, and now he's won. I can't remember where, the Giants maybe, and then he's won 3 rings now with Kansas City. Just like maybe the best defensive coordinator to ever do it at this point. Deserves so much. Like that coaching staff is really just unbelievable. But I will say let's not overpromise. Not the last bit of Lions talk for a while, but I wasn't really bummed out mm-hmm. until watching that game. Did you experience something similar?
I had got that text from a couple people at the start, and it didn't hit me until the middle of the first quarter because I was like, these teams are not playing well. Like this, I watched, you know, we watched every game, the Lions game, you watch all these other teams and you're like, you think they're there. I think they're right there, but under the bright lights, you just watch both of those teams, just like with bad mistakes, penalties, like miscues. And it's just really hard to not think you had a real shot. Cause it's not as if they went up against a Tyreek Hill Chiefs team, you know, like,
yeah.
This was a very, very beatable, winnable Super Bowl, and that's tough.
Yeah, I think that the thing that might be the most disheartening for the rest of the league is, listen, Kansas City's got to replace some good defensive players. Chris Jones is probably gone. Legarius Sneed's probably gone. But, like, if there was a year to beat the Chiefs, this was probably it.
Yep.
And nobody... No one could do it. So just thank God the Lions are in the NFC. And thank God they're good at drafting. Brad Holmes will let you know that they are good at drafting.
You know what it reminded me of? I hadn't felt the feeling since, trigger warning for anyone, 2019 Final Four, where I was like, yes. We lost to Texas Tech. But then you watch the next game with Virginia. And it was like, these teams are not better than my team. Like, yes, my team lost to Texas Tech, but like this was a championship. We were right there. And that was the way I felt about the Lions at the same time. So
that is unfortunately an extremely good comparison.
When we lost to Duke in 2015.
Boy, that's a bummer.
And like they beat the shit out of Michigan State. It was like by 20. It was never close.
Yeah.
And it was like that was fun. It was cute that we got here as a 7 seed and now reality, you know.
Right.
The good teams are here now. Got it. Our bad. That was fine. It didn't hurt. These ones hurt, like you said. So one more shout out I want to give about the Super Bowl.
Please do.
Is Tony Romo made that game very enjoyable from a like X's and O's. Like he was very much a part of all the final drives and was 100% right almost every time. And it's pretty cool to learn about the game in real time like that.
It's very funny because I think we had very different Tony Romo moments from that game because he's still good at the X's and O's.
Uh-huh.
But that guy, you would think he's never called a game on television before because his lack of awareness for the moment mm-hmm. was like, hey, I thought we'd been doing this for a while now,
yeah.
Tony. He stepped all over Nance at the end. He is as good as it gets from an X's and O's standpoint. I do agree. Like he's really, really good, but
yep.
he's man, some it's I saw some scathing articles about him today. And it opened up the door. I'm fascinated to see how Tom Brady does as an announcer next year. Like, sure. I'm very excited. And I was reading something about, you know, he's taking Greg Olsen's spot, essentially, who, from an X's and O's standpoint, if you just want to learn football, listen to Greg Olsen talk.
It was great.
Incredible. Game in and game out. But there's nowhere for him to go.
Imagine getting canned and being the best in your profession.
Yeah.
That's what
we're saying. He might be interested in going into coaching, and like just listening to him talk football, like any staff that could get him on it, pay him whatever he wants. That guy really knows what he's talking about. It's genuinely impressive. I hope he does. I hope he thrives in his next career. He was awesome. But anyways, maybe John College
coach tight ends at MSU. That'd be cool.
Yeah, that would be cool. Maybe he could come coach centers. Do you think he can come coach a front court? Because I think we could use somebody who could do that right about now.
I think I'm tired of even like talking about it. I think every single game, I'm serious, every single game, it's like it's like rehashing the same argument for the umpteenth time. And it's like, why do I even have to do this? Like this, I already know, and it's time for acceptance, I think, from everybody, because like there's no point in getting mad. Stop getting mad. Like, you can be mad about the situation, but during the game, it does no any good to be mad anymore.
You know, it's funny. So we'll talk about these games in particular, but we can stay here for a second. And I think this is one of the things that I have personally struggled with the most over the last 2 years of Michigan State basketball is the fact that last year I got so frustrated because they could have so easily gone out and addressed the center position. You knew with Sissoko, he had no backup. This is before Carson Cooper ever played. You knew that you needed to do something, and yet they did. They deliberately chose not to do anything about it. This year, and nothing changed, just for the record, nothing changed. It was exactly as bad as everybody expected it to be. This year, you can kind of tell yourself, okay, Cooper showed a little bit in the second half of last year, made a legit push. You're like, okay, you probably get by. It's going to be a decent rotation. Nothing to write home about. But listen, we've all seen Colby Wollenman play center. Like, we can at Michigan State, like, these two are certainly at least physically not the worst we've ever seen, right? We can majorly Stockholm syndrome ourselves into acceptance here. And yet, it has not improved at all. Cooper's I stalled out. I hesitate to give him too much grief, but also like just has not raised his level at all. Sissoko is the exact same player that stepped on the court day one when he got to East Lansing. Jackson Kohler, as we'll talk about here, has flashed a little bit now that he's gotten back from injury and, you know, at least brings something from an offensive side that gives you literally just any dynamicism from the position. But like, again, like if you're going to roll the dice and keep those factors the same, then what other factor is going to make it different? If the players stay the same, what other factor is going to make it different? And right now it just doesn't, you know, again, after the last 2 years, it's like, what's the answer? The answer is nothing. But whatever that other element supposed to be just doesn't exist right now. And it came back to kill Michigan State once last week in a loss against Minnesota.
Yeah. And I think you hit it on something with the Colby Wollenman comparison. When he was in, as an example, like those are when you're stealing minutes, you know, mm-hmm. and like, all right, we got to steal some minutes, you know, and hope it doesn't get exploited. And occasionally MSU's rosters, because of injury or otherwise, you got to hide guys a little bit, right? It happens to almost every team. MSU, just like, we just need to become comfortable with the fact that we need to steal 40 minutes. And as soon as you accept that, then you can start looking in and maybe even enjoying the game a bit differently. I'm just suggesting it from my point of view as someone who has bullied themselves through watching each one of these things. So I would just say, you know, they when you start to think about it from a perspective, they're you're playing or trying to find or buy minutes. Sometimes they overplay or outplay that expectation, and it almost feels good. So the other thing I'll say is, if you are my mom's favorite player or players, it's not a good sign, because her favorite player, as I've noticed over the years, is often one that is struggles and like really, you know, needs the extra love and attention. And boy, if all three of her favorite players aren't the centers this year, she's cheering so hard for them. It's like, it's hard to like not love the enthusiasm, but man. So, like you said, dropped one in Minnesota. Before that, home win against Maryland, 63-54. Malik Hall won the game. Really has changed the team overall a bit. He has taken a step to become the second best player on the team. Whether that's good, bad, or indifferent is a different conversation, but he stepped up as you expect MSU seniors to do, and I think that's maybe the point. Mm-hmm. Whereas other MSU seniors are figuring out if they're going to finish strong. Tyson Walker scored a flurry. Can score. He's always going to be good for 20. It's seemingly it's pretty incredible. And then we had a no-show game from Holloman, so it's like rolling the dice every game now. Do you get a good Trey Holloman or a no-stat Trey Holloman? So ultimately what we learned against Maryland is that defensive rebounding is going to hold this team back from its ceiling until they can clean that up, like we keep talking about. You can only go so far. Maryland had 12 offensive rebounds. It's frustrating because that's just something that MSU traditionally hasn't struggled with. And when they do rebound, they win, as we saw, as we'll get to the Illinois game. Like, that's the difference. So I don't know. Should we finish up the Maryland game? Any other talking points you want to capture? No, must needed win.
I mean, well, that's just it. Like, when that happened, it was, we were sitting here last time we talked and we said, listen, you've got a stretch where you only had two shots left in marquee wins. Everything else looks like it should be a win, essentially, until you kind of get to the last two games in the season with Northwestern Indiana. We were looking at this little three game stretch here and we're like, okay, you got to go 2-1 at a minimum. They did that, but and so this was the first on that stretch. I think the disappointing part is Maryland. Well, no, I guess I'm getting my talking points mixed up here. But basically, I think Maryland really put up a dud. Michigan State would honestly, I don't even think played particularly well in this game. Like you said, it was Malik and Tyson, putting up 38 of the 63 points. But Maryland just got stinkers from Dante Scott. He went 5 of 19 from the field. They had a huge, huge game from Jameer Young, putting up 31. Really nice senior season.
He has a spot in the association, I think.
Yeah, like, I think so as well.
It's just a bucket.
Yeah. I think another guy to point out, and we'll talk about him more, because he's the duality of man that is Jaden Akins right now, is pretty wild. He's been fairly consistent. 4 of his last 5 have been in double digits, but like, this was the one that wasn't. After hitting 7 threes against Michigan, turns around and goes 1 of 7 from the field here. But all in all, this felt just kind of like your ho-hum good. You needed to come out and win this game and stack a couple wins in a row type win. But then obviously, things change later in the week.
Yeah, and I think one quietly huge piece that happened in the Maryland game that all but assured Michigan State could handle it was that Julian Reese just decided he did not want to play in East Lansing. He got his 4th foul in the first 8 seconds of the second half or something. Like, it was like truly brain dead stuff. And, that's a massive advantage he over our centers, and that was gone. So for most of the game, because of foul trouble. So kind of dodged a bullet there, not having to deal with him, but he did it to himself. But like you said, got the must win, took care of business at home. Home crowd has been pretty good, by the way, helping this team out.
Yes, indeed.
Go to the barn. Aikens showed up on the road. Tyson Walker showed up on the road. But it was a very, very sad day for a lot of MSU fans because, as we mentioned, there were seniors that do show up for this team, and there are some seniors that occasionally do not, some more than others. And they were on full display. And that was very difficult to watch because it kind of became a moment of wondering in your head, I keep waiting for these guys to take the jump, you know, and then you just have a game like this happens and you start to wonder, can they? Is it going to happen? Maybe it's just not going to happen. One of six from the free throw line from one of our seniors, missed free throw at the end of the game to tie it up from another senior. Sissoko turns the ball over twice on the block without being touched because he still doesn't know the rules or like doesn't understand how to do a post move. And it's like, you can't be a serious team if that stuff's happening. And everyone has to at least not put up a stinker if you want to be a serious team. And it's just difficult to watch road game struggles when the entire team is made up of people who are almost old enough to rent a car by themselves. It's a 25-year-old reference if you're unaware. So I don't know. I think Minnesota didn't particularly even play well. Dawson Garcia is decent. And they let Cam Christie hit five threes. It's the only thing that he can do. And they just were not mentally there on the defensive side of the ball. It's just extremely frustrating, probably the most frustrating loss since the Nebraska game, which a very similar thing happened. So, man, vibes were bad, dude. Vibes were very bad.
Yeah. These are the types of games that experienced teams don't lose. But I think that's what you're saying, and that's what's so frustrating about this team is they are losing teams, that they're losing games that historically, like, go very far back in the lineage of Michigan State basketball. When they have teams with a lot of upperclassmen, they don't lose games like this. They don't lay goose eggs or you know, come up small in big moments on the road against a middle of the road team. Like a middle of the road team. They don't let the guy who literally can only shoot threes go 5 of 7 from three. Cam Christie plays 36 minutes in this game, goes 5 of 7 from three, 5 of 8 from the field. He didn't even go inside the paint. Like, he didn't go inside the arc.
The scout better. Like, I'm sorry. We are too bad and know too little about basketball to know the scout better. Okay.
Yeah, it's just, yeah, it's like your brother played here 2 years ago. Like, we know who you are. Like, it's the same guy.
Seriously.
And it's, again, you can't even blame, like, the freshman. You can't blame anything. Like, seven guys played, you know, for all intents and purposes, 20 minutes in this game. The least, and Carson Cooper and Trey Holloman are the only two without, like, significant experience. And they both played a ton last year. Like, it's, you went seven deep and you managed to put up 56 points and lose on the road to Minnesota after you just had a win that you needed to have. And you got caught looking ahead to a big game at home. Shit seniors are not supposed to do. It's just, and I think that's the really disappointing part, is like, they're just not acting the part. And, you know, you keep saying like, oh, how much longer do we have to wait? It's like, dude, we should have seen this coming a year and a half ago. Like, they're just not built like that, unless they are out of nowhere.
I keep telling myself, I've seen too many episodes in this never-ending saga of movies of Tom Izzo seasons, and it clicks. And, you know, and then I keep telling myself, they're that Baylor game, that's as good as this team can be. Like, that was not, you know, it only happened once, but it happened, right? You can't deny that. And so, you know, keep holding on to it and keep holding on to it. And you almost feel like you can't hold on to it anymore if they don't do something in this Illinois game. And they did. And it was kind of from that perspective, I think, just as fans, there was a bit of reward in that, like, the perseverance of, like, these guys do have it. Like, and same with the guys for themselves. Like, there were some times in this game where they – where this team packs it in. They do not win games like that. And they were down six late and won by eight. And that was, like, a hey – okay moment. And it was also, I'm not ready to give full credit, Austin, because I need to keep an eye on Illinois. That was maybe Illinois. They are they a meltdown team? Like, do they fall apart? Is that going to happen to them in the NCAA tournament against a one seed? You know, like,
yeah,
there it's a little bit them too, right?
For so sure.
MSU gets the credit, but also I have my eye on you, Illinois. You might be frauds.
Just sniffing a little, just a little bit of fraudulence on the Illini. To your point, you make all extremely valid points. To come back, like you said, down late and really dominate the last stanza of this game, huge. Hugely important. I mean, AJ Hogard goes 12 of 13 from the line a game after missing, you know, free throws that arguably lost them the game. Tyson Walker goes for his typical 19. Malik Hall, he has a huge game with 22. You even got good minutes, like I said, out of that front court rotation in Cooper and Kohler. Interesting development in this one was Matty Sissoko only played 10 minutes, barely played much in the second half at all. Foul trouble, a big part of it, but, you know, you also saw when they could have gone back to him at some point, they decided to keep it rolling with the two guys that they had been playing. And, you know, again, I don't know that that's necessarily indicative of anything long term, but something to keep an eye on. Yeah, it was the answer they needed. And, it, you know, again, as a skeptic, an admitted skeptic, I'm like, okay, you did the thing. You've beaten two top 10 teams this year. We know that when this runs hot, when the motor runs hot, you can clearly hang with anybody. You've hung with enough good teams. Like, there's no shortage of evidence of the fact that they can hang with good teams and even beat a couple of them. But what now? Like, is this, because like you said, this is that dying ember, that last flicker of hope. Can this team actually do? Again, like, they're not going to win the Big Ten. You know, could they win the Big Ten tournament? Who even cares? Can they make an NCAA tournament run? If so, they got to play like they played tonight for multiple games in a row. We saw them do it twice last year. Can they do it again? This is that last flicker of maybe, just maybe, they're going to try and figure it out. But whether they do or don't, you got to feel good. Coming out of that game, that was, I gotta admit, whether people want to really, again, like, truly admit it or not, that was about as close to a must win as we were gonna get. Like, that was one of two chances left to put a true second big time win on the books. And if a couple things break wrong and you lose that game, it could have been a very sweaty palm selection Sunday. If this game goes a different way and a couple other things break a different direction. So, yeah, credit to them for everything that they did wrong against Minnesota. They turned around and did it all right at home against Illinois.
And against an NBA player, like, Terrence Shannon is for real. He is legitimate. So you did it against a guy that was the best athlete on the floor. I think that's important. We also learned Tyson Walker basically can't sit. Like, because as we talked about, when you're buying minutes from the center position, you can't afford to go down in talent and anywhere else across the board. And when Tyson goes out, it gets pretty apparent. I mean, he clearly will need to sit, but it's like, strap in, hold your butts when he's out stuff. There's some interesting fun stuff in this game, I thought. The Jaden Akins' technical foul was, you could see it from a mile away. In like, obviously you're mad because it's like, yeah, you got to know better. You're a senior, like all this stuff. And it's like, for sure. But and then like deep down in part of me, as mad as I was like, and as stupid as it was, because you knew that he would get teed up if he did it. I think you need that guy. I think you need the guys. You got these guys need a, like we talk about, they don't have that dog in them. Mm-hmm. Like when you turn and bark at the other team's bench after hitting a three, knowing you're going to get teed up for doing it. Okay. Cause like, then you better keep hitting threes, buddy, to make up for that.
Yep.
And like, it was stupid. I'm not defending it, but I was just like, I think you need a little of that sometimes. I think this team could have a huge dose of that.
Why not? You know,
Trey Holloman talks more shit for as bad as he is. Tyson Walker, if he started to run his mouth for real, like, I think he might unlock something else. Like, I don't know.
I mean, at this point, give it a go.
I don't know.
Like, if that's the edge you need, I think you need somebody else to talk. Like, I don't know, man. Like,
try it.
Who cares, dude? Like, yeah.
Like, got to take you seriously when you're talking to.
Yeah, that is a good point. You have to be able to
be not laughed at.
Yeah, just, yes, exactly. Just like stay in the room, you know?
Mm-hmm. I know AJ tries to talk sometimes, and it's kind of like,
no.
Nah.
That's actually probably the last guy I want to talk, because every time he does, he turns around and something goes wrong after he's done that. So exactly. It's like, no, don't do that. I think maybe that's just it. I think Jaden Akins like reacted out of pure emotion. Whereas it feels to me like if/when, you know, AJ Hogarth does that, he's been thinking about what he's going to do when he makes a big play.
And that's the problem.
Yes, because he's thinking too much about the move, you know, he's going to do. Yes, yeah, he's thinking about the wrong things, whereas I don't think Jaden Akins was thinking at all when he turned around and barked at the bet. Yeah, I think that's the right guy to do it. If someone's got to do it, I think that's the right guy to do it. Keep that confidence up, man. That's it.
Walker passed Adrian Payne for 32nd in career MSU points in only 3 years. You know, he may be, I have to check the numbers, the highest scoring three-year player in MSU history when it's all said and done.
Wow.
That would be pretty incredible. I mean, I know that's kind of like an odd stat, but especially as you go back, though, guys could only play 3 years because freshmen weren't allowed to play on the varsity. Which made no sense, but most of the stuff in the NCAA didn't, and still doesn't make sense. So fast forward, like we were saying, you know, what do you do? Like you said, this was the ember. Like the fire is going out as far as hope to be an actual contending team. You know, with this, it sparks back up. There's a little flicker. So to me, and maybe this is an overstatement or being enraptured with the moment, but these next two games feel like the biggest games on the schedule. If you don't get it going again, like I have no one reason to believe that you ever can get it going, like, because you don't have any big game opportunities unless you think you're going to go into Mackey and win for the first time in however long. So like ever? And this team doesn't seem like the team that's going to do that. To be completely
honest. No, I don't know if MSU's bigs can can hang. I mean, as you look at this next four game stretch, I mean, you know, we're talking about this week, obviously, with, you know, Penn State coming up on Wednesday and then, you know, Michigan over the weekend. But even to zoom out two further than that, right? You've got Iowa, you've got Ohio State. Neither team is particularly impressive this year.
And home games at that, right?
Yeah, like, both of those home games against, again, like two 14 and 10 teams right now. And your road games are against a 500 team in Penn State and the worst team in the Big Ten in Michigan, a rivalry game. If you can't get up for that nighttime, you're crazy. If they don't go 4-0 in this stretch, than any, again, like you said, like we're like hovering over the flame, blowing on that one little ember, just dying to keep it alive. And like the one drop of rain, like is just hanging there waiting to get snuffed out. And if they lose those games, that's exactly what's going to happen.
Yeah. And the only way that a drop of rain doesn't put it out is if you win four straight, because Purdue is a drop.
Yeah.
They are 100% contending team.
Well, they're like an actual, like maybe the number one overall seed type of.
That's what I mean. Yes, like that's a real team.
But I mean, it is funny. Like, you know, if Michigan State wins their next four games, they're 19-9.
Mm-hmm. Still not good enough. I'm sorry.
Still not good enough for Michigan State, but I do see the irony and the privilege place from which we talk, dude. Saying I'm literally like, you're a borderline embarrassment to the program and you're going to win 19 games. Like you're going to put together 19. Another 20 win season. Like, geez.
Yeah.
With a deeply flawed roster. I don't know. I just win games. Maybe
win
I'm spoiled,
games,
man.
Ugh, I'm sorry. So frustrating. It is frustrating, but you know what was also frustrating? Probably frustrating for Aaron Henry when he had to carry a bunch of people.
Oh, my God. You know, yeah, like, I'm sure.
It was probably really frustrating for Drew Neitzel when he had to carry a team. Like, It sucks. Guess what? It's happening. Like, we can't change that. So, you know, like, get there. And Tyson Walker is winning games for this team. Malik Hall is joining him. He's, as we were talking about, one of the better players in the entire conference going back to the Illinois game, notably right after the oft talked about 0 point game against Northwestern.
Yeah.
Since then, though, is with the exception of the stinker at Minnesota with only six, he has been playing extremely well. And It's quite clear as Malik Hall goes, this team goes, because he's the only variable that is oft changing or any changing.
Yeah.
So you kind of need to depend on him to show up until you hope maybe Jaden Akins one day joins him. He did, like you mentioned, against and Michigan, did not show up against Maryland, and had some big shots against Illinois. So like he needs to be as consistent as that moving forward, or, you know, you don't just walk into Bryce Jordan Arena anymore. Right?
No, you just don't. People have been saying it for hours. I'll say this. I hope that this team can do something stupid again, so that Tyson Walker and Malik Hall get the place that they kind of deserve among like Michigan State fans' hearts. And maybe I'm the one that doesn't feel like they're there. Maybe that's a me. But
no,
like,
it's not you.
But Tyson Walker, if he does what you're saying he could do, become the highest scoring 3-year player in Michigan State history, like that is some incredible company. I know you've had guys leave after 2 years, you've had guys stay longer, but like that's an amazing stat at a school that's turned out some extremely good players, plenty of pros in the recent and long term. And then Malik Hall is honestly like, I know I say on here all the time, like it's not good that he's the second best player on the team, which I completely stand by. But the fact of the matter is that he is doing that in a year where people were like, we have going into this year, you had no idea what we were, if he would even really play, given the freshmen that were coming in and just like kind of the state of his game. It felt like towards the end of last year, he just didn't look like the same guy athletically down the stretch. And maybe he's not what he was when he was a freshman, but like he is completely different than a year ago, it feels like. And I don't know, those are the types of guys that typically Michigan State fans fall in love with because they're the idiots that somehow end up in a Final Four, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I hope for their sake that, again, as we as we hover over this flame being kept alive in a monsoon, that they can do something dumb like that, because not only because it'd be fun for us, but because for them, like, they've given enough of themselves and had enough of an impressive year that I hope it just doesn't get, you know, lost in the annals of a frustrating era, admittedly, of Michigan State basketball.
Yeah, I mean, what Tyson is doing is almost being overlooked, or taken for granted, one of the two.
Yes.
I just went through there would be one player. He would be this, I don't think he could catch the one player that ever had more points in 3 years. And that would be one Mike Robinson, who scored his 1,000th point in his 41st game in the 1973 season. So he is a three-year player from 72 to 74. Averaged 25, 25, and 23 and 9.
Who?
My.
I have never heard of this person in my life. I'm dead serious. That's some ball.
For context, Denzel Valentine has fewer points than Mike Robinson. Denzel had played, as we know, 4 years.
Lot. Wow. Mike Robinson. We need to talk more about Mike Robinson.
Dude, I'm about to go watch some tape, dude.
Yeah, wait a minute. Did Mike get in the league? Because Mike was doing. Mike was just before Magic then?
About 6 years. He graduated 74. So, yeah, he was close.
So, like, just before.
Yeah.
Wow. Did he inspire Magic Johnson? You know, people are saying
more and more people are saying this.
Was Magic Johnson the next Mike Robinson, or was Mike Robinson? You know,
there we go. That has to be written somewhere, by the way.
Absolutely. The Free Press or whatever, the Lansing Courier or whatever the newspaper was at the time.
Crucified for it if they found it, but it's like they weren't wrong at the time. Like no, Mike Robinson, man.
Well, I don't know what else we got here, John.
I think
hockey's going well.
Hey, about that hockey.
People are getting mad that we're not talking about hockey.
I know. We should talk about hockey.
Yeah.
Here's what I have done and will vow to continue to do. I have turned on notifications for the Michigan State hockey team.
Listen, that's a big step.
Very, very few accounts get that treatment. I'm just trying to play a little catch up and learn as much as I can without like really, really trying, you know?
Yeah, for sure.
One beat Michigan again in Detroit. That was pretty tight.
I mean, they legitimately have a bunch of NHL prospects. One of their defensemen is Labushkov or Artem something or other is apparently extremely good.
If you're looking at me to pronounce a name, you're looking at the wrong.
I was just trying to see where you'd go with it, really. But I also know Trey Augustine is a Red Wings draft pick and is a very, very good goaltender who also, I believe, plays for Team USA.
I think he's the youngest in the country. See, we're butchering this.
That's fine. If there's ever been anything more on brand than this, I don't know what it is.
Dude, but here's the thing. Here's what I won't do. I barely know anything about football and basketball. If I got on here and sort of pretend I knew what the hell I was talking about hockey, like that would be disrespectful to the listener.
I can tell you that I have enjoyed watching we've talked about this before. I'm a remarkably thirsty, parched sports fan.
Mm-hmm.
I am ready and willing to give all of myself to just competence, specifically in the pro sports. I still hold my college teams to a very high standard, which, you know, may not be fair, but I don't care. And so the fact that the Red Wings are like sniffing around relevancy, you know, a playoff team, et cetera, has got me all riled up. I've been reading articles on The Athletic about who they're drafting for the last like 5 years. And so some of those guys. Oh, absolutely. Maybe not visual time until this year, in part, actually a decent chunk of last year, and then really this year. But like, it's got me, you know, again, the fact that I know who Trey Augustine is, independent of Michigan State, I think is a good sign for the program.
Moving on up. I mean, this is pretty remarkable. Let's talk. The only thing I'll say that I feel confident of saying about the hockey team is that Adam Nightingale is a great coach. And
yes.
Alan Haller made a great hire. And he also hired the women's basketball coach under odd circumstances, as Susie Merchant kind of retired seemingly out of nowhere, kind of little, just didn't feel like it would have, it went normally. But mm-hmm. Robin Freilich, and I'm saying her name wrong, is an absolutely great coach. And she has done a lot with this that program. And it's right in the middle of the very strong women's Big Ten conference. So it just makes me feel really good about the Jonathan Smith hire is what I was getting to. It's like he's making great hires and you're seeing the results. It just makes you that much more confident in his ability to hire great coaches.
I mean, at this point, I think he's batting darn near 1,000. He's done quite a good job. Like you said, I hope Jonathan Smith. Oh, wait, this is one thing we should talk about really quickly. I almost don't want to say it, but another feather in the cap of Alan Haller is, again, we've said, we've been effusive in our praise of him for this Jonathan Smith hire. But the fact that he went out and got his guy ahead of the coaching carousel, which has not stopped spinning, by the way.
It's true.
Is enormous. Not to say that he wouldn't have been able to secure Jonathan Smith ahead of, you know, some other programs, you know, because we don't know. Maybe he would have. But let's not kid ourselves into thinking that if Washington or UCLA wouldn't have been very appealing for a man who, you know, has coached in the Pacific Northwest the majority of his career and grew up in Pasadena, California.
Oh,
you know, I think it's fair to ask or wonder if one of those two programs might have been a little more enticing for him. Oh. Again, and could I have sat here and blamed him? No, I would have, but it wouldn't have been reasonable to do. Doesn't mean I wouldn't have done it. But again, he acted quickly.
Kurt Cignetti, Jason Candle, that's your head coach right now. If that's probably right.
Or Bill O'Brien.
Oh boy.
Wait, did we talk about that last time?
No, and we didn't talk about Wink getting hired at Michigan.
Oh yeah. Oh, we still got a little bit of meat left on this bone, John. let's talk about Bob, and let's talk about Ohio State offensive coordinator Chip Kelly. Dude, when I don't want to pat ourselves on the back too hard, but this is the most extreme example of what we had talked about, where we said nothing else matters if you're not one of the biggest fish. Really? UCLA is a program that is coming to the Big Ten. And they just had their head coach leave to go be the offensive coordinator at a conference, now a conference opponent. So when we say it's a big deal that they only get a half a share because they only make that much money for a little while, this is why that's a big deal. I mean, it's the most big boy program shit I've ever heard of in my life. Ohio State is on level a million right now when it comes to what they've done this offseason. Jim Harbaugh has angered this fan base and these donors and this just dude, the entire state of Ohio in a way that I didn't think was possible.
Dude, that fan base I mean, I'd like to think ours is fun. Theirs is actually unwell.
And, oh, yeah. Deeply.
And like you said, to Ryan Day, truly on the chopping block. Like, absolutely, they were thinking about letting him go and saying, hey, if you happen to get the Texas A&M job, oh, well, truly, like, that no one was fighting too hard. And then you know that that decision was made, and he had to make a pitch to them and was like, listen, I need everything. When I say I need something, I need it. Because your options are having me do that or going to find someone else and hoping it works. So we can do it now or you can wait a year. And of course they're going to choose now. So when he says, I need everything, like they don't even ask how much it costs. It just is.
And they don't even ask what everything means.
No, I don't want to know.
You're like, it's yours.
Exactly. I don't want to know what everything is. I just want to make sure it's happening.
I have to remind everyone, Ryan Day's career record, if I'm seeing this right on Ohio State's page, his career record is 45-6. That's literally on his, now I might even be looking at the wrong year. Hold on. I want to make sure I got this right.
He's been on the hot seat.
It's even better than that. It's even better than that. I was looking at an old page. He's 56-8.
He's on the hot seat for 2 years. He had to lose a playoff game by one to save his job.
I mean, dude, his 3-0, 13-1, 7-1, 11-2. He's gone 11-2 the last 3 years in a row. You might give Mark D'Antonio a run for his money as the best coach in school history if you were to do that. Like, that's an insane stretch. And yet, there is real talk about whether this man can do this job. I have to say, if he can't, this is one thing I'll say. If he does not win a national championship this year, you should fire him. He should get fired.
You gave him everything. He couldn't do it.
He has one of the brightest offensive minds in college football history running his offense. He's got this hand-picked quarterback. He's got the two, arguably the two best running backs in the nation as his running backs. I mean, he brought back everybody on the defense. It's just stupid. The amount
of CJ Stroud, though, like he's had stupid, like and he hasn't.
Yeah,
but
this is beyond that, though. This is he's got all his rival coach is gone. Like, if you can't do it now, you'll just simply never do it. And But the fact that Chip Kelly is their offensive coordinator is just, I can't get over it. I cannot get over that he decided to leave UCLA. Like, also, UCLA can just simply never recover as a pro. There's no way back.
It's over.
Yeah. They did hire a head coach today.
Who?
Hold on.
Was it the San Jose State dude who, did he leave Arizona for it? Because cannot recover from that.
No, it was Deshaun Foster. Deshaun Foster, former awesome, awesome UCLA running back.
Yeah. It's like, how do I know that name?
Yeah, he was sweet. And he was their running backs coach. I don't know how UCLA fans feel about it necessarily. Because, like, wasn't much of a coaching search. It was like, I don't know, 48 hours or so. Welcome to the big time, Deshaun. good luck.
Dude.
Yeah, just wild.
I'm sorry. What is his experience? He's the running backs coach for 6 years?
Mm-hmm.
And before that was 1 year of running backs coach experience at Texas Tech. So he
Texas Tech, notable running back school.
I'm sorry. You hired. Look.
Yeah.
I get it. You're in a bad spot. He's the fan or the player favorite. I get it. I need you to look a little harder.
Or just at all.
I mean, do some due diligence, guys. Like, are they just that broken that they just said, you know what? I don't even care what happens.
Like, yeah, maybe, man, I'm not really sure they care. I'm really not sure. They're like, this guy was good here, right? Although it's also not like Martin Jarman is a really good AD too, by all accounts, which is what makes it a little bit more surprising. But dude, they really it zooms into like another issue, which is they need to, the NCAA needs to, well, A, just do anything ever, but also fix the recruiting calendar. It is a disaster. Like, another offensive coordinator change just happened last week, which was Ryan Grubb, the former Washington, then briefly Alabama, and now Seattle Seahawks offensive coordinator. Yeah,
what again, a blow.
My God. Unbelievable moves for Ben across the board. Or Ryan, excuse me. Ben Grubb, former offensive lineman. But yeah, just... it's screwing these kids. Like, I guess these kids can now enter the portal like for 30 days afterwards, but every other roster is set. Like, where are they going to go? Like, they can't possibly be that excited about wherever it is they're going to end up, even if it's a good place.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know if the NCAA is going to be around to fix that, to be honest. Like, we're heading down a path here. It's happening in the next few years, maybe. I think I always knew it was going to happen fast, but like then when it's happening, you're like, oh wow, okay,
this
semi-pro league is forming. All right, we're doing this. Yeah. What a change in coaches. Like, you look around and maybe Deshaun is great, right, dude? But you look at the peers in his conference right now, like,
yeah,
your former head coach is now an OC. Like, you're going to play them, dude.
Yeah. Like, probably this year.
I mean, I didn't look at the schedule, but like, it's props.
Like, soon.
I think that was such a power move. Like, By Ryan Day. Like, I'm surprised he was able to pull it off, to be honest.
I mean, dude, I remember reading that Chip Kelly was interested in going and doing, like, taking a coordinator position. But you would have thought, like, Jeff Hafley from Boston College, who was replaced by Bill O'Brien. Mm-hmm. Again, very briefly, those Bill O'Brien Ohio State offensive coordinator jerseys are going to be a hit at Lollapalooza some year. But yeah, you would have thought, like, okay, if he's going to leave, he's going to leave to go to the NFL. Because that's, you know, but to not only not do that, but to stay in college football and stay in the Big Ten is just like, whew, that's about as cold blood as it gets. Like, that man, like, if UCLA actually has football fans, which I'm not sure they do, they might be out for him, because that's as bad as it gets.
It's humiliating, is what it is.
Yeah. Oh my God.
So yeah, the, like you mentioned, Bill O'Brien, also joining the Boston College staff as a new head coach. What do you think here? Were you surprised?
Not really. Like, I mean, he was in New England for a while. He's in at Penn State, so he's kind of like an East Coast-ish connection guy. I think it's actually a pretty good hire. You know, he's gotten, again, we've seen the stat of him with all the, like, I think, what was it, 8 years with Belichick and Saban, and he didn't win a national championship. Like, I mean, that's pretty bad. But
I almost think it's a bad hire because of that.
Well, that's just it. Like, had that tweet never been sent, people are like, oh, Bill O'Brien, yeah, he was the coach of Penn State. Oh, they have all these sanctions. Like, in reality, he was dealt an incredibly terrible hand when he was at Penn State, and he turned that thing into – I mean, sure. He parlayed that into an NFL head coaching job where he did a pretty decent job for, like, an extended period of time, and then was at Alabama where, like, it's not like they weren't successful or didn't have good offenses. So, I don't know. There's a lot to be said for it. He obviously hasn't won anything of you know, note in terms of championships, but – I don't know. It's also like it's Boston College, you know, mm-hmm. And
great point.
You know, you had the chance to get an actual brand name, to whatever extent he's a brand name coach,
it
who
is.
Could maybe like professionalize your operation. I mean, you know, that's not to say he's going to like be around for a million years if he has success, but at the same point in time, I don't know. It's Boston College. Like, who was Jeff Hafley? Like, I also don't know who they're going to get. So, like, in my estimation, Bill O'Brien, if he's there for 3 years and he leaves, it means he did a really good job. And, you know, he left Boston College in a better place. So, you know, kudos to them. I actually think that's like a pretty darn good hire. And a hire Michigan State is going to have to contend with this year when they go on the road to Chestnut Hill.
Great call. You know,
man,
that's coming up here. You know, as you mentioned, like, Bill O'Brien, it's like, if you get a former head, like you said, head coach in the NFL, like, to be your college coach as a head coach, like, that's big time. Like,
oh, yeah.
I don't know.
Especially if you're a program like Boston College.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, like, honestly, I forget the, like, remember playing them against Matt Ryan or in the whatever bowl. That was the last time they were relevant, right?
I mean,
it's been a minute.
That's when they were most relevant, for sure.
Dude, that's...
I mean, they had, geez, yeah, that's a long time. That was when I was a freshman in college. That was when, yeah.
Tough times.
Yeah, they played against Central Michigan. I was at that game, and I was like, "Oh, this is people really don't care about Central Michigan football, huh?"
Right.
That's what I remember thinking.
And Brian Kelly was the coach, right?
Yeah, it was his last year there.
Overplayed Dan his Lee. Hand, and he messed that game up. He got so cute trying to win with all those like weird ass trick plays and stuff. And it was like, bro, no.
It's very funny that you also remember that because they tried. Didn't
they
quite
did.
Work. But listen, man, that guy, talk about failing upwards. That's another good one for him. But yeah, dude, I think I'm very excited for college football. I can't wait for it to get here, even though it's literally February. But we'll talk recruiting. We'll do like other college football related adjacent things here in the coming weeks. But for now, you know, I think basketball is upon us. I just win, you know, just win. Just win a couple.
And hockey,
of course. I think it's all I got, John.
Same here.
All right, guys, listen, that was fun. We really meandered around there, but, you know, that's what
you got
you
to the
for.
Finish line.
Yeah, it's what you come for. All right, guys, thanks as always for sticking with us. John, this has been Austin. We'll catch you next week.
You know when you're listening to a true crime story that has an unbelievable plot twist that makes you stop in your tracks? That's what our podcast, People Are the Worst, brings you with each episode. I'm Rachel.
And I'm Rebecca. We're identical twins who love true crime cases that make you say, "Didn't see that coming," and we hate the people responsible for them. Listen to People Are the Worst now on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts.